All right, we're back at it again with a new episode of the IBS Freedom Podcast. This one is super exciting to me because we're talking about BTS. Now, okay, this is really hard for me to do, but if I had to try to rank them in order of my favorite to my least favorite, again, it's challenging because they're all really great. The one that always catches my eye is definitely Jimin. Oh my God, I could go on about him for days. And J-Hope, they're really great dancers. V also always catches my eye, and Jungkook, all excellent dancers. Then I'm probably going to say Suga. He's an underrated dancer in my opinion, and his raps are just fire. Then I think RM and Jin are probably bringing up the back just a little bit.
Whoa. What rabbit hole are you jumping down? You talking about the BTS K-pop group?
Yes. What other BTS could there be?
Well, we're doing behind the scenes today.
Shoot.
I know. BTS behind the scenes lady.
Oh, you kidding me? Says the woman who's this was her idea to do this episode. But yeah. Let's do a BTS behind the scenes episode. A little glimpse into our day-to-day life. I know. How much do we want to share with these people?
We could share it all.
We could share it all. I mean, but then where do we begin? Why do we do this? I'll kick it to you first, perhaps. What does a normal day look like in the life of Amy Hollenkamp and Sari?
Yeah, it's kind of wild at this point. There's definitely components that are very similar each day and that are pretty consistent. I think everything from like the sleep element is a little up in the air still because Cece's just a finicky little sleeper. And like more recently, just to start out, like early in the day, she's been waking up fairly early, like more like 5:45, 6 when she used to sleep in till like 7. So that's been sort of a newer development. And so a lot of times what I will do is Armand typically, if she wakes up in the middle of the night, it's typically me going in there. But then when she wakes up early, Armand will go and hold her for maybe like 30 or 45 minutes in his arms. And sometimes she sleeps, sometimes she just kind of rests. And then they come into my room and wake me up, and Cece scrambles into my bed and is like, you know, like very
starts
excited.
Starts jabbering away.
Right. So that's usually how my day begins. It's a little child running in. She will tell me now to put my glasses on because I don't know. She must not like me with my glasses off.
She's not used to seeing you.
Right.
Barefaced.
She's like, glasses on, mama. Glasses on. I'm like, okay. But yeah, so that's usually how I start my day, as a little morning alarm clock is my child. But yeah, that's the sleep side of things has been a little rough over the last 2-ish years, I would say. Even like the end of my pregnancy was a little rough.
And then basically Cece's whole existence.
Right. Cece's whole existence. She is getting better. I would say typically there's at least like 2 or 3 nights a week now that she sleeps through. But like this week she has a little bit of a cold right now, which like if she's hacking and coughing, sometimes I'm surprised she stays asleep when she hacks and coughs. But she sometimes wakes up and, you know, cuddles in our bed and goes back to sleep. But yeah, she also, though, if she does sleep in our bed, she likes to stick her hand like down my shirt. Like she likes the comfort of that. And I don't know, that must have been like started around breastfeeding. Maybe, I don't know, yeah. But it's still like a comfort thing. So whenever she comes in our bed, it's like it takes her a minute to like figure out her hand position. I'm like laying down and like her little hands flopping all over my shirt, like trying to figure out where to go. And I'm like, oh, God. So yeah, sleeps, I would say a little deficient still, but progressing in the right direction. And I'm kind of just trying my best and letting it be the best I can at this point.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad that you guys have a system too, where like our mom kind of takes those early mornings and you take the evenings, because I think if you could divide and conquer, it makes that a lot easier. But I will say we were hashtag blessed because Jess was a good sleeper basically from like 5 or 6 months onward.
Yeah.
And still, I'm surprised, always surprised how soundly that kid sleeps.
Yeah.
We joke. So my maiden last name was Sear. And we joke that my dad's side of the family had the Sear sleep gene. And my mom has always said that Sears can sleep on the edge of a cliff in a thunder and lightning storm with a tornado passing by, and they would still stay asleep. So I think that the kid inherited the Sears sleep gene, thank God.
Yeah. I think, you know, hopefully with our next child, hopefully in the near future, again, I would hope they're a little bit of a better sleeper, but who knows? We at least know what it's like to have a below average sleeper.
There you go.
So, but yeah, it's one of those areas where it's like, oh, I'd love to get like consistent sleep. And, but yeah, it's just not in the cards right now. And I'm just kind of rolling through it and getting the best that I can. I'm still, if I look at like my Oura Ring data, like I'm still averaging like right at about 7.
How is your Oura Ring still alive, by the way? Because you had yours before I ever got mine. And mine kicked the bucket and the battery basically died like 2 years ago. So how are you preserving this thing? Do you put it in the freezer?
I have no idea. I honestly have no idea. But it is alive still. And it's like the old version. I'm wondering when they're going to boot me off because now they have like the monthly payment thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like at some point they're going to cut ties with people. But I do like look at the data broadly just to see like, oh, is my sleep generally improving month to month? And I've been at about 7 hours consistently for a while. And that means like sometimes I'm getting, you know, 5.5 just because it's a really bad night or something and she's not going to sleep. Like there's been a few nights where, you know, she's awake for 2 hours and you're like, why aren't you going to sleep? And she'll be like hungry and you'll like go downstairs to get her something and she won't eat it. And you're like,
yeah,
what are you doing?
You're
to me,
making
child?
Stuff up.
Right. But then other nights, again, I could get like 7 hours and 45 minutes. So like kind of above average. But typically, like if I look at my data pre-CC, I'm more falling in the lines of averaging about 7.5. So I'm like a half an hour short of like, I think where I was optimally.
That's fairly respectable.
Yeah. And this is like actual sleep time versus in bed time. Which is also something I feel like some people are like, I'm getting 7 hours of sleep. But in reality, that's like the time in bed, which is also always good to factor in, too, when you're trying to improve sleep is factoring in, you know, there's going to be some time in your in bed that you aren't sleeping. So take that into account. But yeah, so I'm still working on hopefully improving that in the next couple months as our sleep improves.
Yeah,
I think get that trending in a better direction.
Bit by bit, certainly. And then we'll just keep with the theme. We'll do your kind of day in the life view first, and then we'll pivot to me later. So you get your CC wake-up call, and then I assume like you go eat breakfast or do something of the sort.
Yeah, so typically I make breakfast for CC first. So we usually, like, I change your diaper typically and get her breakfast going. And then
what is Miss Cece feeling these days for her breakfasts?
She's like a pretty finicky eater at this point, but she likes yogurt a lot. She likes peanut butter a lot. So like, you know, peanut butter toast, or she loves eggs. She loves all
solid
fruit.
Choices.
So like a lot of times she'll have, you know, like some protein or fat with half a banana or, you know, some oranges. Weirdly, she loves grapefruit, which I like of all the fruits that cracks me
really?
Up. You know, what's funny is her, so my Armand's stepmom, so like her Gigi, got her like, did the whole process of opening up the grapefruit, peeling it, cutting it up. And I think like the whole process fascinated her, where you're like opening up and there's this pretty pink fruit inside. And so she got really into it. But so she likes grapefruit, that's like not sweetened. I feel like my mom used to put like sugar all over it.
Yes.
Growing up, she'll eat it plain. So she cracks me up with berries, though, because she'll rotate berries all the time. Where, like, 1 week she's a blackberry girl and won't touch any of the berries. And then, like, 2 weeks later, she's all strawberries, but no other berries. So she does like berries, but she kind of rotates them. But yeah, she'll do a variety of something like that in the morning. So I usually have that going. She, like, sometimes gets a little bit of TV time in the morning if I make my breakfast. So, like, I'll make my breakfast then. It's typically, like, a lot of my breakfasts tend to be, like, yogurt. Sometimes I'll have some toast, with it. Usually, like, my yogurt, I started doing this thing, like, when I was breastfeeding, but I'll do, like, yogurt, and then I'll chop up a little bit of, like, a dark chocolate bar, like a square, put it on top. Then I'll put fruit on top. I use all different types of fruit. And then I'll do, like, usually some sort of toast. Sometimes I'll have a bar on the side, depending on, like, my needs at the moment. Because, like, when I was breastfeeding, I'm not anymore, but when I was, I would eat so much in the morning because that was, like, my set meal.
I remember joking with you at one point because you were saying that you needed more calories. And I was like, I don't know. Do you like lard?
Right.
Like, well, what are we left with?
At that time, too, Armand would, like, watch Cece so I could, like, get my breakfast in. Like, I needed to focus on, like, how much I was intaking. But, yeah, I would say breakfast is typically along those lines. I typically have more of a standard breakfast. Like, I mix fruit and stuff in and out. But it tends to be more of, like, a staple meal for me, whereas a lot of my other meals kind of vary much more broadly. But, yeah, so that tends to be my breakfast. Are we going to go through my day first and then your day?
Yeah, I feel like that maybe I don't know. What do you think format-wise makes the
most
sense?
Yeah, we could just go through mine and then go through yours. That might make sense. So, like, I work part-time, which means Monday, Thursdays, and, like, part of Friday, I'm on CC duty. So, like, if I'm on CC duty, a lot of times we'll go to, like, the aquarium or the zoo or the children's museum, or we'll go hang out with the neighbor. We try to get out of the house because my child is a mover and a shaker. She does not want to sit in one spot and play with toys. She's like how I was. My dad always called me a ricochet rabbit because I was like, could not sit still. I was always on the move. She's very much like me in that way. So, like, she'd rather go outside if it's freezing cold than be inside. So we're outside a lot, and, like, doing stuff in the morning typically.
Admiring the planes as they go overhead.
Admiring the planes. We actually go to a park that's at the airport, at a little airport. So, like, the planes are real close. So those are fun. But yeah, like, usually we try to get out and do something. In the morning, we go to the library a lot. They have, like, movers and shaker stuff where they, you know, sing and dance. I will say, though, the movers and shakers need to up their game in terms of, like, pizzazz. Because some of the people that are leading the like, activities at these events are, like, very... I was telling my sitter this. Like, I feel like I could do better leading the group of children. You know, there's no...
The truth comes out.
Right. There's no... Let me just tell you. It's going to shock everybody. But the children's librarians that run those...
grannies. Be nice to
them. No, they're not. They're like my one girl I went to grade school with who runs it. I know her. I know her personally.
But here's the thing. Are they tailoring it to please the children? Or are they tailoring it to please you?
Well, no.
Of course, your standards are going to be higher.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. Like, they're not... You know,
and he's like, I don't find this entertaining at all.
No, it's not that. It's like they're not tailoring it to the kid. Like they're, I feel like there's a pizzazz you have to have as a children's performer to be like very engaged and like.
Are the kids just like.
The kids don't care because they have cool things like a bubble machine that like shoots bubbles.
How can you compete with a damn bubble machine?
And they have
though,
shakers
Amy?
That they can shake. So
I think Amy's being unreasonable. In the video below, if you're on YouTube, comment below and let me know.
I'm just saying right now that the library performances could use some work. They need to watch a little bit of like Miss Rachel or something.
We need actual circus clowns and trapeze artists in here.
Exactly, Nikki. I have standards and they're not being met.
I'm just picturing it though. Can I just pause? So I'm picturing like the little kid classes that we used to take Jess to at the library. And I'm just picturing like you sitting in the front row and you looking around like, WTF. And then like, I'm picturing you like raising your hand and saying, I am not entertained. Can you do better than this? I know that's not what actually is happening.
No.
But well, and again, now.
I think you would agree if you could see it live. There's just more. There needs to be more
razzle dazzle.
Razzle dazzle. Yeah, for the kids, not for me. My concerns are with the children.
Sure.
But anyway, so we go to the library a lot. We typically eat lunch around noon, and Cece naps. So like lunch. Lunch again, like I usually feed her first, and I'm kind of making, or we make stuff together. Like she likes eggs a lot, so sometimes we'll have that for lunch, and I'll have eggs. I'll put some avocado on my eggs. She will eat around the avocado, but I'll still try to put them in her eggs.
Eventually, she'll take to it.
Yeah. So, we do that a fair amount of the time. Most of the time with my meals, I'm just trying to kind of make sure I'm balancing them out properly. Sometimes it's like hodgepodgey. I always talk to clients like, clients are always like, do you have tons of recipes for me? And I'm just like, not really. Like, I'm just not.
I don't
not,
really use recipes that
right,
much.
Right. I'm not really that. I eat more for utility than taste. Now, I want things to taste good. But I feel like I'm happy with something tasting like 6 to 7 out of 10 if the utility of, you know, it being a balanced meal and pretty convenient. Like my values for the meal would be just like, am I getting nutrition in? Is it like tasty enough? Then I'm going to be happy. But I feel like there's some people that want more of the like... The taste is maybe a higher preference than convenience.
Or you want the whole meal to be like...
cohesive.
All cohesive. I was going to say copacetic, and that didn't sound right to me. But yeah, cohesive and like...
Yeah. Like some of my meals are weird.
You planned out the whole thing.
Right. It's like, oh, I'll have an RX bar, a slice of cheese, like a piece of cheese. So I'm getting kind of some protein and some fats in. And then, you know, some fruit and maybe some carrots and hummus. It's like, that looks like the most hodgepodgey meal. But like, if you actually looked at the breakdown of nutrition, you know, you're probably getting some decent protein, some decent fat.
And
you know.
if you enjoy all of the components of it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I've been known to do the same thing, especially for lunches.
Like charcuterie style
where it's yeah, like, that's oh, what a little I was bit of this, actually, little bit of that. Like tapas right. style where it's a little sampler. You know, even today I had like an open-faced turkey sandwich and then I made soup, but the soup, it was a butternut squash and coconut milk and like cinnamon and nutmeg kind of flavor profile versus like turkey and mayonnaise and bread. Savory kind of, and the two didn't go together at all, but I was like, all right, well, I want the soup, and I bought the stuff to make the soup, and there's my fiber and some vitamin A and some nutrition, and then I get the protein and like fat and carbs. So yeah, it was well-rounded.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been known to do something similar.
I'm a big soup girl in the winter, and again, I typically don't make tons of soup, but I really like Amy's brand, you know, and some of the like, there's
your bias, that's why.
That's true. It's my name. But I will say, like, I'll tell clients at times, you know, like, you can get a lot of diversity in some of those soups. Granted, you know, some people like to make homemade soups, but some of those can be really nice, like, lunch options or, like, something you could play around with. I know in the winter, I've been doing a little bit more of that. A lot of times, I might even throw in more vegetables just to, like, I like a really concentrated soup. I don't know, something about it.
Chunky.
like chunky. I like the chunky.
At the risk of quoting and crediting somebody who used to drive me absolutely nuts, Rachel Ray would call it a stoop.
Okay.
Like halfway between a stew and a soup.
Oh my God. I love stew though too. Oh my God. Like a beef stew with carrots, potatoes, and so good.
Yeah. That sounds good right now.
But yeah, I love a good soup as like a component to a meal, and that can kind of start to look weird if you have like a soup and you're like, oh, I need protein. Sometimes you can throw protein in. I do have leftovers, some, especially at the beginning of the week. We go to Armand's parents every Sunday and have like, we typically have pretty Persian meals on Sundays. His dad makes a lot of kebabs. We don't always do that, but they make nice food. And they usually make a lot of it. So I'm like, hell yeah, I'm going to have this like the next day or even the day after at times. That's really nice to have like that a few times a week. Because you get some protein going. But yeah, lunches again, like I would say still like fairly convenient, but varied. And then usually Cece goes down for her nap at around 12. I think historically before about like 6 months ago, I would do a lot of like resting during that time. But now I've been using that time a lot more to write my book. So like spending like at least an hour to an hour and a half writing or researching, different things during that time. So I've had a lot less free time, which I think it's catching up to me a little bit. So I've been trying to, after lunch and after Cece goes down, to do like I call it lazy meditation. I've probably been doing it like 5 out of the 7 days now, where after lunch, I will go and lay down in my bed or the guest room, and I'll just play like meditation music and rest for 20 or 30 minutes. I feel like that does me like a world of good. It's not fancy. It's like easy. And I tell people too, like if you're ever starting meditation or any like mindfulness, I will say like my brain goes for the first like, you know, maybe like 3 to 5 minutes, but then it naturally kind of like fades. I feel like sometimes that's the case. Like some people just might need a little more time for their mind to chatter to kind of die down and for them to relax. But I've always liked the lazy style meditation that's not structured. And for me, sometimes the more structured stuff, I get a little more in my head about like, am I doing this properly? Versus me just like laying down and like surrendering to the music and kind of letting my brain naturally kind of come down versus me like focusing on my breath or like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's like the difference between like, I'm going to do this thing that has a name and there are certain expectations and assumptions that go with it,
right,
versus I'm just going to relax for 20 minutes.
Right.
And like, whatever it is, it is. I will say in this way, I think we are not cut from the same cloth.
Okay.
Because I guarantee, I mean, I've never tried, maybe I should try, I don't know. But I guarantee I would fall asleep and I would just take a nap.
I fall asleep all the time, but I only nap, like I would say tops whenever I do fall asleep, and I could feel like I'm in like the deepest sleep. I can only nap for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, no. No.
Okay, so like if you went down,
the risk, I would nap for like 2 or 3 hours and I just,
oh my God. Yeah, I could not do that. So, like, even when I fall asleep, like, I usually never set an alarm or anything. Like, I feel like I could. If that was the case, I would be screwed. But, like, yeah, I would say typically I'll lay down somewhere close to noon after I put Cece down. And, like, I'll wake up if I do fall asleep by, like, 12:25 or, like, 12:30. I don't sleep.
My brain does not compute this at all.
Okay.
I would be out. And it would either be an alarm or a spouse or a child yelling that would have to wake me up. But shy of that, it would be tough to wake me up.
That's so interesting. Yeah. But that's something I've been doing a lot more the last like few weeks. And I usually have done it. I just have gotten kind of out of the habit of it. So I'm getting back in it. Then in the afternoons, typically, depending on if I'm on CC duty or not. Again, I do client work Tuesdays all day. We do the podcasting on Wednesday afternoons typically. And usually I work a little bit in the mornings on Wednesdays. So I work a decent amount on Wednesdays. And then Friday afternoons I work and Sunday mornings I work. So like if I'm working, I'm kind of like doing my thing in the afternoons. If not, you know, sometimes we'll go to the park or like do some different things with Cece when she wakes up. She usually wakes up around 2. So like she sleeps for a couple hours. Yeah, so nothing too crazy. Just kind of catching up with the child keeping up with her a full-time job.
And now here's the question of the hour.
Yeah.
So now we get into the evening hours. Who is more so the cook of the home, you or Armand, when it comes to dinner?
Definitely Armand. He is obsessed with going to our butcher shop by our house. And he used to not cook at all. It was like a big complaint because I was like, ugh, can you cook like one meal a week? And then now it's totally opposite. I like never cook unless he's not home. And he just got weirdly really into cooking over COVID, and really into grilling and like meats. So he's like obsessed with the butcher shop. They give him a discount. They're obsessed with him. We once went to a wedding. It was funny because it was definitely during like a COVID surge, and like the bride's mom kept being like, "We're surging COVID wise, but whatever." Like again, it was just a weird wedding experience. But anyway, basically during that wedding, one of the kid butchers, he was like 18 or 19, was like, Armand, like freaked out, was telling everybody, like, he goes to the butcher shop I work with. Like, it was just this big deal. And then
Armand was a celebrity.
Right. And my friend that got married was like, because it was her sister. So it was the bride's sister. And the bride was my friend. And so my friend, the bride, kept being like, my sister's boyfriend loves your husband, like loves Armand. And then like the sister came over and was like, my boyfriend loves your husband. Like, again, it was like the talk of the town at this wedding that Armand is like a frequent patron of the butcher shop. So anyway, like the butcher shop, Armand's obsessed with going there, getting like steak, pork chops.
It's too funny.
And he's like been really good about cooking. Sometimes he's not as good about like side dishes. So sometimes I have to watch out because I'm like, okay, you made a pork chop and we have 0 sides. So we need to do something. Like I can't
crushing it on protein, man, but we need something else.
And he's done better more recently about like making sure we at least have like a potato or something on the side. But yeah, that's his, again, he cooks like a frat boy or something. If you just like have one steak and like nothing else.
Hold on. No, I don't know about that though. I will never forget one of my earlier patients that I worked with. I think it maybe was like my first year or two in practice. Mm. I don't remember what the guy's chief complaints were. It was that long ago. But I remember being startled by his diet. And this was before carnivore was a thing. It was even before keto was like super popular. I kid you not. He ate like a whey protein powder shake with raw eggs in it for breakfast. Then he would have like 2 cans of tuna for lunch. Then he would have like a giant ass steak and a chicken breast and something else for dinner. And I remember the whole conversation being like, yo, man, you probably need to throttle back on your protein and like occasionally eat a vegetable. And he, you know, he's like some young college kid at like NC State. He was like, well, I don't like vegetables or I don't know how to cook them. And I think he said, I don't like vegetables. And I insisted, that just means you don't know how to cook them. They're delicious if you know how to work with them. Yeah. And I sent him all these recipes. I was like, here. And I sent him like Alton Brown Good Eats and America's Test Kitchen to show him how to cook. And he just did not give a shit at all. And he never made any changes to the best of my knowledge. But I was like, you know, usually on food diaries, I see kind of standard looking stuff. And then this one, it was just like all protein all the time.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, this is a bit much.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I had a client more recently with a really high protein level, and he kind of had some weird liver stuff going on too, and just being like, oh, let's try to lower that to see what happened. Because, like, I don't really know if we should be pushing protein this hard. And with, he kind of had some narrow choices too of like what proteins he was using. So, yeah, but Armand also doesn't like vegetables. So we probably,
I roll from before. The dietitian, by the way.
he's like worse than CC because he, like, I swear to God, when he does eat them, and again, I tried, he's also like, annoys me a little bit because he's like, are you proud of me? Like, he will eat like one or two florets of broccoli as fast as humanly possible, but not let it touch his plate. Like, he'll do it before, like, he has to get it over with if he's going to try it. He used to gag.
Like, he's being a brat.
Like, yeah, oh, he look, used to no, gag. No, no. And like his family, his parents would say he would bargain so hard to not eat vegetables that they just kind of gave up growing up. But yeah, he's a problem child. He weirdly does like salads, which is so random. Okay. It's like salads, starchy things like potatoes he will eat. But yeah, that's kind of pretty much it. Unless I like force him. He won't do it, and that's just not my MO. I'm never going to force someone, but he is my biggest project. I need him to eat more. He does like fruits, but I need him to eat more just as an example for CC. Just because, like, if you're not eating the vegetables, she's going to think she can't eat the vegetables. So, we're... It's a consistent work in progress, but don't think that I can control and dictate what my family members do diet-wise. And again, I would say I'm not a super pushy person anyway. If someone wants my help and I can encourage him, like, hey, I made this, like, you want to have a little bit? And sometimes he does do it, but yeah, he's pretty stubborn in his views. So... I don't know.
Well, he would hate for your life to be boring.
Yeah.
And he wants to present a clinical challenge to you every day of your life.
Yes.
So there you go. But that's adorable. I think the highlight for me of the segment is Armand being like famous with the butcher people and being the talk of the town. That's so precious.
I swear. And he'll constantly come home and be like, can you believe the butcher gave me a free pound of, like, that? Like, he gets all the free stuff. And I don't know. I haven't tracked as much how much he's spending at the butcher, but I'm kind of like, if you're the celebrity star at the butcher, I'm sure you're spending a pretty penny at the butcher store. But yeah, it's hilarious. But yeah, the butcher people are obsessed with him. Like, if I went in, which I never do, if I went in there and said, like, I was Armand's wife, I think they would lose their mind. So,
because yeah, you'd be like, that's like saying, I'm trying to think of like a good current example. That's like walking in and saying, I'm Taylor Swift's boyfriend. Right. Now, obviously, he's famous for some reason or another, too. So that's maybe a bad example, but you know, like, I'm Beyonce's husband,
right?
What?
I know. Yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic because, like I said, I think he goes there usually like twice a week to buy stuff. So, and he, like, knows when the fresh fish comes. Like, he knows, he has all the ins and outs at the butcher shop.
All right. This seals the deal. We've been saying for years that we need to meet in person. And I need to get my butt up to Cincinnati, apparently, and finally give you a proper hug. Tell Armand I will expect the finest butcher shop meal to be put together. Or better yet, we could crash Armand's parents and we could eat Persian food at their house.
Oh, yes.
That's even better.
The kebabs.
But I will expect the royal treatment when I come into town.
The kebabs are phenomenal. So. But as we've talked about before, we have to watch the food safety at his parents. I know you've talked about at your parents.
Oh, God.
You have to watch the food safety. There were some sketchy things that happened last weekend when they were cooking that I was just like, what? And Armand and I had to like point out, like, no, you can't do that. But yeah, the food safety element sometimes at the in-laws is sketch. But the food, when it comes out, is very good.
And isn't that really what matters?
That's true. Food poisoning risk be damned. Yeah.
But yeah, we share that in common. My dad in particular, we see him do stuff and we're like, oh, right. Please no.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, well, all right. Any other nuggets? Oh, you've been playing tennis. How often are you playing tennis? And like, is that more of a daytime or an evening or a weekend
kind of thing
for you?
It's more of an evening thing. Usually I play on like, usually I definitely play Mondays and Saturdays. I try to get another session in during the week. It kind of depends on the schedules of some of my hitting people, my hitting partners. But usually I play a set match, like an inner club match on Saturdays, and I practice on Mondays. And it's really fun. I'm really enjoying it and like improving and having a lot of fun with it. So it's very, very fun.
We'll have to put that on the radar too. Whenever we meet in person, you can teach me. I remember, I think that's safe to do because I'm not under the impression that tennis is like a super big injury sport, but my best friends in college, they were twins, and both of them were very, very good skiers. And I remember I was over at their house because they lived locally a couple towns away from our school. So we were over at their mom's house and their mom had cooked us dinner and we were having like a slumber party thing. And I remember the twins were like, we should take Nikki skiing this year. Yeah, we can teach her how to ski. And their mom, in all seriousness, goes, girls, why would you do that to your friend Nikki? And she basically was like, she's going to get horribly injured. This is a very bad idea.
Yeah.
Because she's not like the most coordinated friend you have. Why would you take her skiing of all things? No, I'm going to veto this. And they were like, oh, okay. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a valid point. But yes,
yeah, I definitely think skiing.
Tennis, I could maybe do.
Tennis, you could definitely do. It does take some time to get the hang of it for sure. But just hitting around, you could certainly do. But yeah, that'd be fun.
Too.
But yeah, I usually play in the evenings during the week. And then in the like mornings to early afternoon on my match days. But it's really hard to get a court right now because everyone's like wanting to be inside at my tennis, where I play tennis. So sometimes that's challenging because you're like, oh, let's play tonight, but there's no courts available. Which that'll get a lot better in the spring.
But then everybody's going to want the outdoor courts.
Right, and the outdoor courts are more problematic. So it does get a little weird, but that's enjoyable. I feel like in terms of like bedtime routine, I've just been trying to get to bed a little bit earlier. Just now that she's waking up so early. It's like that's thrown off my routine where I was probably going to bed a little too late, like more so at like 10-ish, 30, which is a little late for me. I typically like to go to bed around 10. I was pushing it a bit, but now I'm going to bed more so around 9:30 with her waking up earlier.
Yeah.
So that's always a constant adjustment, is like trying to figure out the best ways to get sleep with our diva sleeper.
Well, she's keeping life interesting. She's keeping you on your toes, Ma.
That's for sure. Very true. I feel like people underestimate, and I always think now, just like knowing what I know as a mom, people underestimate like how many calories you burn just like chasing a child around, and like how much oops, I just dropped something.
Mixmaster Mike is going to have your head, by the way.
I know.
He won't be able to edit that out.
I know. That's all right. But I do just think it's something I take into account more as a clinician when I work with moms with a lot of young children or one young child. Just they might be burning more fuel than you think. And they might need more than what would be accounted for in like a typical calorie estimation. So
that's a valid point.
That's always something that I kind of consider.
Well, it's kind of the equivalent of, you know, you could kind of calculate calorie need, but then if you find out, oh, but the person is a waitress and, you know, logging 20,000 steps per day at their work, or like a chiropractor who's up on their feet and like, you know, squatting and adjusting and a very physically active job, then you're going to need to adjust that.
Yeah. I always think just it's funny too, people's reference point of, you know, what sedentary is and what active is. Like some people might, like I was just on a call with a potential new client and she was saying, yeah, I'm really sedentary. She's like, you know, the only exercise I get is like walking to and from work, but she lives in New York City. So she's like, yeah, I get like 8,000 steps a day. And I'm like, I wouldn't really necessarily call that sedentary.
No, so, that's not sedentary at all. The benchmark for that is under 3,000 steps a day.
Right. So I was kind of telling her like, no, I think you're doing better than you think from a step count standpoint. You know, I think she was really historically more active. So reference point wise, she might be a bit more like, oh,
that could be really hard with former athletes.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, well, you know, for me, like I used to work out like 3 hours a day.
Right.
When I was a rower. And now if I do half an hour workout, there's like that little part of my brain that feels like, oh, this isn't really enough of a workout, but it is.
Right. Right.
Chill.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, there's the sneak peek into Amy's life. I feel like this is an episode, by the way, that could be super interesting or super not interesting to people. And there's no way to find out until we post it.
Right.
But we're just gonna roll in. So, yeah, I'm trying to think. So my daughter's 8, so not as much sleep variance and craziness there. But basically, we usually wake up begrudgingly at about 7:30 or so. And then these days, so similarly, like we're kind of creatures of habit with the breakfast here also. Jess has been super, 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 super into egg and a hole breakfast for a while. So, you know, you like make the hole in the toast and crack the egg in and cook it all in the pan. That's her favorite thing. So I have to get up a little bit earlier and go make her egg in a hole. Then I think A, because I'm already making eggs and I already dirtied up the pan, but B, I've just been in a mood for eggs. But lately I've been doing like 2 or 3 eggs and a piece or two of my gluten-free sourdough. I've been into simple needs lately.
Nice.
So that's a pretty typical breakfast for us. But yeah, I'll wake up at 7:30, basically get her downstairs by about 8. She has her breakfast. We eat breakfast together while Mike gets her lunch ready for school. We're kind of tag teaming. And then I herd her upstairs. There's a lot of herding, at least at this age, at least with my child. There's a lot of like kind of cracking the whip and herding them. It's like herding cats. It's impossible. And then I'll tell her, like, get dressed, and I'll go get dressed. And then I come back, and she's, like, laying on the floor in her bedroom, right. Or she's playing with a toy, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Not getting dressed, that's for sure.
Not getting dressed. And then I usually get some complaint lodged against me, like, I am. And it's like, no, you're not.
Right.
So anyway, there's a lot of that, hurting in the morning. Although,
like bargaining and...
Well, this morning, I did so good. My child is very susceptible to reverse psychology. If you ask her to do something, even if you make a good case for it, she's going to be resistant typically, but sometimes we could trick her with reverse psychology. So this morning I made her breakfast and my eggs were still cooking. And by the time I brought my eggs to the table and sat down, she was mostly done with her breakfast. And I said something about like, oh, you're going to be dressed by the time I'm done with my eggs. No, because you take forever to get dressed. So that's not going to happen. So she took that as a challenge. Mom point for me, because my child went upstairs, got dressed, brushed teeth, brushed hair, sprinted back down the stairs and was like, ha, Mom, I beat you.
Oh my
I was like,
gosh.
Oh no, I can't believe you beat me. This is exactly what I hoped for. And
but
then she was ready.
You like, were the true winner.
Exactly. Exactly. So she was ready with socks and shoes on and everything, like 8 minutes before we even had to leave the house. And then I got to just leisurely go upstairs and put on my jeans and get ready. So that was freaking glorious. But yeah, so then, again, divide and conquer. So Mike puts together her breakfast and her water bottle and backpack. I get dressed and then I walk her over to the bus stop. And then lately I've been trying to get better about being less sedentary.
Yeah.
Because I sit here and I do this. I'm either filming or doing appointments or doing something on my computer or Instagram or something. So very sedentary for work. So lately I've been doing like a lap or two around the neighborhood and trying to just get like a 20 or 30 minute walk in after I drop her off at the bus stop. It's been freaking cold, so I don't love it at the moment, but it's something.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think I always love getting out in the morning just in general.
Something. You and I are cut from different cloths.
Okay.
Like I'm denim and you're sequins.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I can tolerate the cold okay as long as it's sunny. If it's like cold and dreary, that is more not my cup of tea.
I do agree. The sunshine helps. My big thing is like my face and my hands are always freezing. Even if I wear gloves, no matter what, my hands are always cold. And I was telling a parent at the bus stop the other day, I was like, if I could get away with wearing like one of those ski masks and not looking like a burglar walking down the street, I totally would. But can you just imagine somebody wearing one of those like ski masks with the eyes and the mouth cut out and just like strolling down your neighborhood street? People would totally think I'm casing the joint.
I think that you need to do that and then get a shirt or a coat that just says, I'm not a burglar. I'm just
I am not a criminal. Right. I do no crime. Yeah, I think that would be lovely. But I'm optimistic it will warm up soon. A lot of the trees around here have leaf buds or flower buds, and a couple of trees have flowers. By the way, PSA, where you are, do you have Bradford pears?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Hold on. There's an easy way to tell.
Okay.
Do you have a tree with white flowers in the spring? And if you smell or drive past said white flowers, it smells like the worst case of bacterial vaginosis you ever did smell.
Okay, probably not.
Okay, you don't have these trees then. They, like, you drive past a Bradford pear and you could smell it far away. Not a mile away, but far away. And so I got excited because I saw a small white tree. I've gotten into foraging the last year or two.
Yeah.
And I saw a small white tree. Or I'm sorry, a small tree with white flowers on it really early in the season. And I thought, ooh, it's a Juneberry tree. Yay, I'm going to go check out that tree. No joke. So I drive Jess over there. We were coming back from a park. So I drive us over there. We park, we walk over to the tree and I'm examining it. And I'm like taking pictures of the flowers. And I'm like, I don't think these look like Juneberry flowers. What is this tree? And it was my child who picked some of the flowers and then smelled them. And I was like, Mom, these smell weird. And then I smelled them. And immediately the smell of vagina and fish was so overpowering. I was like, oh, that's Bradford pear. Mystery solved. So anyway, I'm very mad at the existence of Bradford pears. So they were planted down here in abundance because they have pretty white flowers. But they're invasive and they're spreading. So actually, last I knew, I don't remember if it was the state or the town, but last I knew there was some sort of initiative that like for every Bradford pear you dug up and turned into them, they would give you a new tree to plant. Like a new actual tree, not a sapling to plant. Yeah, because they're that bad. But yes, they smell terrible. And I accidentally willingly sniffed one the other day because I thought it was a Juneberry tree and I was horribly mistaken. So,
oh my God, I'm looking it up. It's banned in Ohio.
Good. Good. We have so many
illegal
of them
to
here.
Sell, grow, or plant calorie pear, also known as Bradford pear in Ohio, because of invasive qualities and likelihood to cause economic something or other.
And fun fact, the pears, not edible. The pears, Amy, are this big. They're like
God.
The size of a small marble, not even a normal size marble, a small marble. And they're worthless. They're not really edible pears either, which is the double whammy of awfulness. But yes, that's my PSA against Bradford pears. And I just wanted to
they do look
all
pretty.
They are pretty. I'm going to go to that tree. I'm going to load up a whole box with Bradford pear flowers and just ship it to you.
Oh my God.
And then you can live the experience.
But it honestly sounds horrifying.
They're real
to
bad.
To be fair.
So anyhow, that was a tangent. But yeah, so I try to take my walk in the morning. And then my schedule oscillates between two extremes. I either have a patient work week where I'm cramming in a whole ton of patient appointments, like day after day, and it's a whole book day. Or I have what I have affectionately called workcation weeks, which means like maybe I'm working, maybe I'm just lounging around and taking it easy. It's a workcation. And it's basically that's my time to film. So like I busted out a couple of YouTube videos on Monday. This is a workcation week for me. So I did a whole day of YouTube filming, or I did another, you know, chunk of time working on like emails and miscellaneous tasks. And like I had to like verify an account with something, and I had to do something for work comp for my employees. It's just like little bullshitty things that pile up. But yeah, so I kind of oscillate between like super structured, super scheduled to nothing is scheduled.
Right.
And then Wednesdays, as you said, we do our podcast on Wednesdays. And Fridays are almost always scheduled for me too, because Friday afternoon is like my big marathon FODMAP Freedom Q&A day. So pretty much what happens is I do my first Q&A from like 12:30 to 2:30 or maybe 3, depending how many questions there are and how many people are on. Then I take like a 20 or 30 minute break and I go get tea, I go get water, get a snack, walk around, say hi to Mike, whatever it might be. And then I hop back on and then I do part two of the Q&A from like 3:30 to 5:30. And that way I try to accommodate as many time zones as I can. And then my assistant kind of does the same thing. She does like a lunchtime and a dinner time, Eastern Standard Time Q&A the day before on Thursday. But yeah, Fridays are pretty much scheduled for me because that's my FODMAP Freedom Q&A day.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I don't know. Evening wise, I'm usually done with work whenever I'm working on around 5:30. It depends, because on patient days, I have a ton of chart notes to do, and that could take me quite a while. But I'm usually done with appointments by like 5-ish. And then I'm hashtag blessed because my husband also cooks the majority of our food, but he does do sides.
So excellent. That's good.
Yes.
And Armando's sides better. He's getting better. I don't want to slam him too much, but there were definitely moments where it's like, okay, we have this really nice steak and no sides.
Yeah. And nothing else.
Right. It's like, you probably spend good money at the butcher shop on this really nice filet that we have no sides for.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's funny.
That's right. We can tease Armando a little bit, but
that's true.
But yes, so Mike is usually pretty good about having dinner ready, and he usually has dinner ready at like 5:30, 6:30, depending on the day. And then we have to beckon our child back in because she's outside playing with her friends until all hours of the day. So we have to beckon her back in. She'll eat dinner and then she'll usually go back out to play again. And then our evening routine is the corralling and herding into shower and bedtime, because I myself am a bit of a night owl. And I gave birth to a night owl. So yeah. If she had it her way, she'd be up until all hours of the night, living la vida loca.
Right.
And it'd be great. So it's like pulling teeth, trying to get her in from playing. And then, okay, time for a shower. And then we have to brush her hair because my child has Hermione Granger hair. It's so thick and wild. Like, picture Hermione Granger from the first Harry Potter book.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like thick and kind of frizzy and like a lot of it. And it's really long and it has a little bit of a curl or a wave to it, but it's not totally curly either. It's nuts. So it takes a lot of time and effort to brush that hair out every single night and braid it so it doesn't snarl up on her in the night. So that's usually how I wrap up my day, is I get her herded into the shower, do the brushing and the braid. And then once she goes to bed, which you might go to bed before my child some nights, actually. She's going to bed. We aim for 9 o'clock. It almost never happens. She's usually going to bed at like 9:30, sometimes as late as 10.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, we don't have a lot of time to do much of anything else. So sometimes I'll come in here and like read some PubMed studies or work on little piddly things for work. or finish up a chart note or two. Sometimes I just go lay in bed and I read my foraging book or watch K-pop videos.
Yeah.
And that's like my defrag time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's more or less a day in the life. And then we go to my parents' house quite a bit on the weekends. They have 3 dogs and 2 cats. And
they had a puppy too. I never heard what happened.
Yeah. No, how's that's one of the 3 dogs. Yep.
How's the puppy doing?
Pretty good. This is a PSA for the people at home. If you have a medium to large size puppy, and not like a Chihuahua is what I'm trying to say. If you have a medium to large size dog puppy and you are taking them in and you're considering getting piddle pads for them, just don't. Don't. Because my parents never used piddle pads for any of their dogs for as long as I can remember. And then for this puppy, for some reason, they started laying down piddle pads for her. And I was like, this is weird. Mm-hmm. They've never, and Mike and I kind of were like, huh, they've never used this with any of the dogs. And, you know, it was nice and convenient at the beginning, but now they're trying to transition her to going outside and yeah. She doesn't want to. And I was like, well, have you tried just taking the piddle pads away? And they're like, oh, yes. And she just pees in that same spot because oh now, gosh. Like, the floor smells enough like urine that right. She thinks that's it. And as an added bonus, because normally you would say, okay, just kick her out, like, every hour on the hour.
Right.
She's afraid of everything.
Oh, my God.
She's a golden retriever. I don't know if this is a breed thing. Again, if you people have ever had a golden retriever, comment down below, let us know. She's terrified of everything. And even, like, she's very suspicious. So if you try to get her to go out and you're trying too hard, she'll be like, okay, this is sus. And she won't go.
Right.
You know, like, so if you're like, come on, Haley, come on, come on. Her response is, like, why are you so invested in me going out there? Is there a murderer waiting for me? I'm not going. Mm-mm. And right. She'll cower and she'll go like to the other side of the room. So it's like, you have to trick her into going outside, but you can't want it too much because she'll know. So that's the challenge too, is that she's such a little scaredy cat puppy that trying to get her to go outside is challenging. Just like, the other two, Coco, they have an elderly chocolate lab. Pardon me. They have an elderly chocolate lab named Coco, and she is just the most stereotypical lab, like super, super food motivated, just a lover. Like
right.
She'll go up to anybody wagging her tail, oblivious, just oblivious.
Yeah.
And like things that freak out the other dogs, she's just like, doom. And she's just cool. The other two are more suspicious. Luna, their 2-year-old, who's a mutt, a rescue. Luna always has this deeply concerned look on her face, but she's not as much of a scaredy cat. Haley is regularly terrified by everything to right. a point where they're talking about getting her CBD doggy treats.
Oh, wait, yeah. Well, we try to do just like to chill Chip out a little bit, do CBD. Not that he's like actually not scared of very many things. And the CBD had other herbs in it, and it just made him really paranoid. Like, it made him bark at things that weren't there. He was, like, really weird when he was on it. So maybe we need to try a different brand or something.
He was hallucinating. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what to make of this puppy. She's the sweetest thing. She's super sweet and super cute and, like, very affectionate. But also, she's dumb as a rock.
Oh, my God.
Like, again, and we've had labs. We've had different dogs. Never have had a dog this dumb. So as an example, Coco was recently shedding pounds of fur flying off this dog. So I took the Furminator and the brush and I was brushing Coco and trying to get fur off. And as I was like putting the clumps of the hair on the couch and kind of compacting it, making it a ball
right.
and putting it on the couch next to me, the puppy was stealing the clumps of hair and trying to eat them.
Oh, yeah.
And she's all like,
oh, God.
Doing that with her tongue. And we had to keep chasing her away. She did this many, many times. Like, a tumbleweed of cocoa fur would be on the floor, on the couch, or in my lap, and she would come steal it. And we're like, dude,
right,
it cannot be tasty. How dumb are you? Yeah, she thought it was delightful.
Oh, yeah, but, Haley.
Yeah, oh, Haley. Very sweet puppy, but dumb as a rock. But yeah, I think that's more or less day in the life. I'm trying to get back into working out again. I was doing really good in the beginning of the new year, you know, all that new year energy. And then I got sick, and it was like ever since I got sick, even though I recovered fairly quickly, it knocked me out of my rhythm just enough. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, oh, all right, I guess I have to do it after all. So I'm trying to get back in the routine. I'm kind of starting with the walking as the first point, and then I'll get back into lifting. But yeah, that normally what I was doing is I would take Jess to the bus stop, walk a little bit, and then do my workout real quick, and then hop in the shower and then start my work day. So I was trying to knock it all out in the morning.
That's funny. Yeah. I'm very much not a morning exerciser. Which is
if I'm going to do it, it kind of has to be the morning, because then I'm like, oh, then I can shower, then I can start my day. I'm not as inclined to work out at night, I find.
You know what my optimal workout time was like? There used to be a class at my gym that was at like 11, which is just such a weird, inconvenient time. But I feel like I performed the best and like that the best, where I could have had like a decent sized breakfast and let it sit for a decent amount of time, because I can't really work out on an empty stomach. But yeah, I tended to like that time. If I had my pick of any time, it would be that. And you can kind of split up and do, you know, work a couple hours in the morning, work out, take a break, eat lunch, and then kind of hit.
That could be nice physically, because again, like, I'm sitting so much for my work.
Right.
And after a while, the old aching bones start to ache, man.
Yeah.
So it might be nice to break up the day and have movement in the middle of the day. I have thought about that. I've thought about extending my lunch break and basically having like a workout slash lunch and shower break in the middle of the day. I just haven't ever bitten the bullet and done that. But it could also be ingrained in my brain from all those years of rowing. But I don't want to do that again, because that was wake up at 4:55, be at the boathouse at 5:30, on the water or running or stretching or doing something at 5:30 on the dot. And we wouldn't get off the water until like 8 or 7:45. So not a lot of desire to do that again. But yeah, I think
that sounds terrible.
Still ingrained in my brain that exercise is a morning thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, now... Can you indulge me for just a moment, my darling, my sweet? Now I get to talk about BTS for real. Okay, so
proceed.
Thank you. I'll allow it. So, Amy, so here's a couple of factoids, and then I'm going to spit out some things that will mean nothing to you for the sake of anybody who actually likes BTS who's listening. They're just curious about my opinions. So, BTS, obviously, worldwide sensation. They're great. I'm a big K-pop person, so they're not my only band that I follow, but I do like them. My entry into K-pop was Blackpink, but then funny enough, I don't like any of their recent stuff.
Any bands that are K-pop.
See, I should send you my playlist there.
All right.
The thing that always kills me, so I got into Blackpink because I watched the Netflix documentary about them, and I was like, oh, this is interesting, and their music is catchy. And then I got into BTS and was like, oh my God, they're great. And the thing that kind of hooks me a lot of the time is the dancing. Like, the songs are catchy and I do like the music, but the level of dancerhood that is demonstrated is just mind-boggling. And every group has at least one really exceptional jaw-dropping dancer, and then like all of them are really good. But with BTS, I remember, so I found, I think Butter, which was one of their English singles back in like 2020. That was the first one that I found and I liked it. But the funny thing is I was listening to the song the first time and I was like, yeah, it's okay. Like, I don't know what all the hype is about. But then I got to a section where J-Hope is doing his like 5-second dance break. There's an elevator scene. And I was like, man, that boy can move. And then I was hooked, because then I was like, okay, who is the guy in that particular scene of the elevator? Oh, his name is J-Hope. Oh, okay. He's like one of the main dancers or lead. I don't even know. But then you fall down the rabbit hole. But yes, they sensation for good reason. Fun fact, they came from a really small company and the company was super, super close to being bankrupt. And then BTS like took off in popularity. and they saved their company. And now their company is huge, obviously, because BTS is huge. But yeah, they literally saved their company from bankruptcy. They were right on the brink. And they happened to take off just at the right time, in the nick of time, which is kind of a fun story. And I think also the coordination between dancers is really intense. Like, they're so in sync with their dance moves that it's mesmerizing. So anyway, this brings me to the important questions of the day. I already ranked the members. I love them all. So don't come after me, Jin fans and RM fans. I love them all. But the two that really capture my eye typically are Jimin and J-Hope. I know it's cliche because they're the best dancers, but it is what it is. But my favorite songs to watch, and I'm going to send you these.
Okay.
I'm going to send you the dance practice for both of these songs, Amy, and you can see the level of dancing, the level of coordination that astounds me. I will expect a full report on your opinion of these songs, by the way.
Okay.
So you're not getting out of it. Fire and Danger are two of my favorite ones to watch the dances of. Again, just so coordinated. Poor Amy's like,
BTS.
I don't know these songs.
These are BTS songs?
Yes. Yeah, we're still on BTS.
Okay.
And then listening-wise, I don't know. I like too many of the songs to say what my favorite one dance-wise is, but I feel like Fire and Danger On is another good one for dancing. And their most recent song before they went on hiatus, the Run BTS, that's a good one too. Mm. But yeah, very entertaining.
Cool.
Yeah, they're all goofballs, which is kind of fun too. You can watch, you know, video clips and appearances, and they had a TV show, like a variety show for a while. And it's a hoot to watch these guys. I always wonder how much is staged versus how much is really their personality. You know, it's like reality TV. It's like, right, how much of this is scripted and how much of it is really reality.
Did you ever watch The Hills?
I did not. But my best friend in high school loved it.
Okay. Did you hear about the ending of The Hills?
No.
So like the whole point in The Hills, it was like a Laguna Beach spinoff.
Yeah.
And so the whole, you don't really know what's real. So like that's the whole question mark typically anytime you watch these shows. Well, at the very end, it shows her like pulling off the set, basically, and like kind of like pulling off sets and stuff, basically giving the impression that a lot of it was fake. As like the last scene of the show.
If you watch reality TV and you think it's reality, you've got something else coming, man.
Well, and I've even, you know, I was on Diners, what is it? Diners,
Drive-Ins and Dives, I think.
Yeah, I've been on that show. Did you know that?
I feel like you might have brought it up once, but repeat for the people at home.
Yeah, I was on that show, and I feel like, you know, they're like, did you meet Guy Fieri? I'm like, there's no. Like, he was not there when we were there. Like, absolutely not. So I think all of it's just, there's some scripted nature and, like, definitely a lot of manipulation of scenes and a lot of cutting different things in reality TV, but it's still fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting to speculate how much of it is real and not real.
Yes.
Here's one little fun fact. So it's not me, but you know the show The Bachelor?
Yeah.
A girl I went to high school with was on The Bachelor.
I know, Jamie Otis, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And then she was on Married at First Sight.
Exactly. She was on the first season of Married at First Sight. And it's, you know, it's so funny. I was telling my best friend from high school recently, because our 20-year high school reunion is this year.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. Okay. I was bringing up with Dan. I was like, I wonder if anybody's going to do anything or get together. It wasn't like I was especially chummy with people in high school, but I'm just kind of curious. It's been 20 years. We have doubled in age and we've matured and we've changed. And like, there are some people where I wonder like, oh, what are they up to? And I have to admit, a little teensy part of my brain is like, and I wonder if Jamie Otis is still like how I remember her versus like what I see. Because I just see what everybody else sees on the internet, like Facebook and Instagram.
Right.
But I'm like, just a teensy bit curious. And it's funny because I remember her. She was really nice.
Yeah.
Drop dead gorgeous and really nice, which is a really rare combination, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's actually I would talk to.
And she was a really good season. It was the very first season.
So they had no idea what to expect.
And she like did not like her husband. Like she thought he was not attractive at first. So it was and they're still married, which is hilarious.
Yeah. And they have two kids going on a third.
Yeah. She cried. Or tried for a third. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of look back and I wonder, okay, was that nervous breakdown where she's like crying and saying that she's not attracted to the husband? Like, was that all staged for drama or was that genuine? I don't know. But it was very interesting. I never have really gotten into reality TV, but I had to watch the first season of that show just because I knew that she was on it. And I was like, this is so trippy.
Yeah.
Because also to put in perspective, I wasn't just in the same high school as her. Like she was in my graduating class and I grew up in the middle of nowhere. So our graduating class was only like 100 people. So you end up having classes and talking to every single person at your grade level.
Right.
So, versus if I was from a city and there was like 1,000 people in my grade, that wouldn't be so compelling. But
it's weird too. When my first college that I went to, there were a couple bigger people that went there. Like Steve Carell went to my first college. And like my friend who was in my grade, her dad went to school with Steve Carell. And like, it was so weird when he was on The Office because they just like turned on their TV and he was like, whoa, like there's Steve. That's so weird. And then he like blew up like crazy. But it's so weird situations like that. It's such a small world. Jennifer Garner also went to my first college too. She was apparently very, very nice. And so was Steve Carell. Like both of them have really good reputations.
Yeah, I could see that.
This is the gossip corner of the show.
Yeah, so we went from the April Fool's joke, BTS episode in the beginning, then Day in the Life of Amy and Nikki, back to BTS, the K-pop group, and now the gossip corner.
Right.
I feel like I don't have a lot of other juicy deeds. Well, I will say this too. So one more thing for the gossip corner, I suppose. So in undergrad, I did my last semester, not abroad. Is there a word for abroad, but you're in your own country still? I don't know.
Yeah, like
elsewhere. An internship. What am I trying to say? So I went to school in Buffalo and then I did my internship in the last semester of school in LA. And it was at this place that at the time was called Athletes Performance. And they had would-be and already world-class athletes. Mm. And it was a really neat internship. But we were basically like coaches we were interning with the coaching teams and we would rotate through the different programs. So at the time when we were there, we had two soccer teams that we worked with who practiced out of that facility. And then there was a batch of combine guys who were like getting ready for the combine. And we had some other like miscellaneous people. Like there was a triathlete, like an Olympic triathlete, and then a couple of other people. And I remember when we first got there, like the first day they were telling us, okay, yo, you have to remember that some of these people are really famous and like they don't want you being a goofy goober.
Yeah.
So do not ask them for their autograph. Don't say like, you're my favorite, whatever. You just have to treat them like a normal human being. And all the other interns, because these are people with like exercise science and kinesiology degrees, right? Most of the people I went to school with for undergrad were jocks. They were super sportsy people. They were super into sports and athletics. And I was kind of the one that like, yeah, I was a rower, but I wasn't a jock. But anyway, so all the other interns are like, oh, okay, I'll try. It's going to be really hard. And I was the only one who was like, fine.
Right.
I don't know who these people are anyway. And said, they were like, one of the two soccer teams that we had training with us was the LA Galaxy, which is David Beckham's. I don't know if he's still with them even, but at the time it was David Beckham's team. And they were like, again, like you could literally walk down the hallway and see David Beckham potentially.
Right.
He wasn't there at the time. He was like in England for something, but
they
were like, you could walk down the hall and just see David Beckham and you can't lose your shit.
Right.
And again, I'm like, I know the name David Beckham. And I know if I saw his wife, Posh Spice, I would lose my shit because I loved the Spice Girls growing up. But I wouldn't recognize David Beckham if he punched me in the face and right. said, my name is David Beckham. So there's zero risk for me. Right. I'm going to treat these people like normal people because they are normal people.
Right.
I don't even know why they're famous.
Oh my God.
But anyway, yeah. So, but I remember like there was a football player. I think he played for San Diego. He was already an established football player. He wasn't in the combine group. But I remember like he would drive up from San Diego every single day to train and then he would just drive home.
Oh God. And
I remember he would drive insanely fast. I'm not endorsing this, but he would drive insanely fast and basically he got speeding tickets like all the time. And he just had this attitude of like, oh, whatever, I'll just pay the speeding ticket.
Oh my God, yeah.
But like, it's worth it to me to drive faster and get here faster. But I remember all of us normal people being like, what? What?
Right, right.
And then you wonder why Southern California traffic is so bad because you right. have rich people who just figure, whatever, I'll just pay right. the fines. I'm just going to drive however fast I want.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Oh man.
But yes.
And my only last celebrity story, I have one more. So this was when we were maybe like 16 or 17. We were in high school. One of the girls that went to my high school's father owned a catering company that would cater for Riverbend, our like music center. And my friend worked for the catering company. And so it was a John Mayer concert. And like, again, like you're not supposed to react to celebrities. But so my friend was like walking with something and she just was not anticipating John Mayer to be somewhere. So she basically was like, ah, John Mayer. Like she like basically screamed and said John Mayer. And John Mayer just like looked at her and like gave her a look and then walked away. And she was like, and she said, oh, I'm so sorry. Like she basically like apologized. She was like, oh, whatever. And like tried to go back to what she was doing. And then John Mayer, I guess, asked her to leave, but told someone else to tell her. But it's so sad because she was like a 16-year-old girl. You know, like what was she going to, she wasn't really a threat, but.
Hardly, yeah.
It was sad. It painted John Mayer in a bad light, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I do kind of get it from his side also, but yeah, that is a bummer.
It's like this little 16-year-old girl carrying food.
And but that's also his target demographic.
That's probably true.
You know, that was his fan base. Also, would it be better or far worse if it was like a 45-year-old man?
Like, worse.
Oh, John Mayer.
Worse.
That would be 10 times weirder, actually.
But anyway, I do have to wrap up here. Armand's trying to use the office for something, but
fair enough. Well, hopefully everybody enjoyed our April Fool's episode, our BTS episode. I could talk about BTS for a lot longer, but Amy was a fuddy-duddy and wanted to do behind the scenes instead. Comment down below. Let me know, what are your favorite BTS songs or music videos or dance practices? I will rewatch the dance practices more than anything else, typically, because that's what I'm in it for. But yeah, let me know all of your BTS related commentary, and I will be sure to check this episode when it airs. And we will see you right back here for another normal episode of the IBS Freedom Podcast. Until then, take care.